For the Family Vision Center in Greater Downtown Atlantic, this is Bob Debensee along with Grant Jelly. Grant is the conservation officer for Castner-Dare County, so I'm doing a good job of it, too. Morning, Grant.
Good morning, Bob.
Give you a little plug there early on.
I'll
and
take
you are,
it.
You are, as a matter of fact, you know what you're doing. Hey, let's talk about the pheasant opener. That was last Saturday, and what happened?
Well, kind of like we predicted, it seems like the harvest... You know, the opening weekend of pheasants is, I think it's more of a tradition for a lot of people than them expecting to go out there and be successful. We've got a lot of crops standing, so, you know, that always makes hunting conditions pretty tough at best. So there was a few birds killed. Talked to some hunters who saw fair numbers of birds. However, they had difficulties in harvesting many. So... I guess the best advice to give somebody is if you're looking to go and be successful, I would do some homework and, you know, look for, if you're a public land hunter, I'd look for a public area that doesn't have crops bordering it or surrounded by standing corn or beans. If you can find that and the weather cooperates, you can have a pretty good hunt. But our pheasant numbers are probably going to be a little bit down from last year, but they're going to be pretty comparable. Quail, as we've talked, we've had some concerns about with the long, cold, snowy winter that we had. They just can't survive it sometimes. But nonetheless, it's time to get after them, and I think it'll only get better from here.
I think in one of the news deals put out by the DNR that we have the pheasant population to handle a kill of 400,000, but we only got hunters enough to get about 200,000.
Yeah.
That's probably right. We're real short of young people out in the field.
It is. It's unfortunate. You know, we try to do things to attract young hunters or new hunters by having youth seasons. And, you know, now they have the... hunting and habitat for non-residents, it's a five-day license that's available for them. And so maybe that'll attract a few hunters who want to come in and experience our small game hunting. But, yeah, you know, there's a lot of good opportunities out there. We've talked a lot about the IHAP program and the public land side of things, and that program is going well, and we're hoping to have more and more public areas available to hunters. So, you know, with lots of places and options for people to go, we should be able to recruit some new hunters, we hope. So, yeah, it's always a good chance, or every time I get the opportunity to plug that, you know, if you have the opportunity to take a kid out or take a new hunter out or a wife or, you know, anybody who's never experienced hunting, please do so, because the future depends on that. And we also offer the apprentice license, which is kind of a neat deal for, I know that some adults are kind of intimidated by going to a hunter ed class, that they kind of have this preconceived notion that it's going to be full of young kids. And a lot of times, of course, it is a lot of 11 and 12 year olds. And so a 30 or 40 year old person gets a little bit shy about going there. But so we do offer the apprentice license, which a new hunter can purchase two times or two seasons in their lifetime before they will then have to have hunter education. And of course, we have the online option for hunter ed. But, you know, I've talked to people who are trying that or working on it, and it's challenging. It's more difficult, it seems, than actually going to the class.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, I hope that people want to test the waters and have fun and hopefully keep coming back.
I generally survey the world from a certain seat in a certain restaurant here in town, and I watch things like the pheasant hunters, and I don't see any kids, very few.
Well, you know, my partner and I, we worked over the weekend, we were commenting just the lack of orange that we saw on the roadways, you know. Well, it was pretty low. You know, you can always tell when hunting seasons are upon us, because you'll see orange hats on dashes or people dressed in orange driving down the road. And we just saw very little of that this opening weekend. So we got our fingers crossed that it's going to get better.
I bet it will. Let's change over and go big game hunting. Deer is in rut, and we've got the archery guys probably out in force right now.
We do, yeah. Had some reports from hunters and people that have been out that they've seen quite a few bucks chasing does lately, so that's a good sign that the rut is here or just about to be here for some places. Of course, a lot of that depends on the length of the day. The amount of daylight that we have is kind of what is the good predictor for the deer rut. And of course, weather conditions are usually pretty important as well. But the when the rut comes, of course, the bow hunting can be fantastic. But it's also a good reminder to people who don't hunt that you need to pay special attention when you're driving this time of the year, because you know, early mornings, late evenings, or sometimes right in the middle of the day, you're going to see deer out running around. Mm-hmm. And really need to pay attention. If you see one deer run across the road in front of you, be prepared to have more behind it. You know? And it might be a big one behind it, so pay attention to that. And then you know, you can drive down the road right now and see there's a lot of blood spots, and I get phone calls about deer being hit. It's a good reminder, or a good chance to remind folks too, that if you do get involved in an incident where a deer collides with a vehicle, before you can take that deer home, you must have a salvage tag or contact a conservation officer or a law enforcement officer can give you that salvage tag. So, we issue a lot of those this time of the year. People, you know, luckily want to utilize the meat. And then of course I get the other side of it where it's a big buck that's been hit on the road and he's been laying on the shoulder for 3 days. And I have a person call and say, "Hey, I want that deer rack." And I say, "Well, you can have that deer rack, but you're going to take the whole deer." And, sometimes that's less appealing to people,
well, yeah.
You know, but that's important to us because we don't want a lot of deer laying on the shoulders with their heads cut off, because guess who gets the phone calls then? I do.
Sure.
And a lot of people say, "Well, there's a deer poached." Well, you know, a lot of times a deer on the side of the road, yeah, with its head's missing is not a poached deer. It was a road or a car killed deer. But anyway, salvage tags are important, and you know, contact us if you do need one.
You bet. While we're talking about deer, let's talk about deer hides. This is a program I had no idea was available, and it's been going on, I guess, in Atlantic for a little bit, in the Atlantic Elk Club on deer hides.
It is, yep. So I've got quite a bit of experience with this, because when I worked in Missouri, this was a really popular program that the Elks Lodges would put on and promote. And as a matter of fact, I believe that Missouri now leads the nation in number of deer hides that they collect annually. But basically what the program entails is the Elks Lodges collect deer hides from harvested deer in the fall, and then they will ship those hides off to tanneries, and they will be sent back to veterans' homes where they will be made into gloves, or they will be made into kits where people can make gloves out of them, or other leather goods. And, you know, it's a great program because it utilizes something that I see a lot of waste. I see a lot of deer hides that are thrown in ditches, you know, hauled off in the back patch every year and left for coyotes. And, you know, if you can, you know, it doesn't take much. When you're skinning your deer, roll the hide up, throw it in a trash bag, and get a hold of the local Elks Lodge, and they will have somebody there that can get it from you.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than see those hides end up in the ditch, I would hope that people would consider this program, because it's a good one. It doesn't cost us a dime, and they make good use of it. So before you throw your hide in the ditch, or you know, want to feed it to the coyotes, give your Elks Lodge a call. Heck, you can call me for that matter, and I'd be happy to make the arrangements for you. But we've got a good program here that I hope we can get more people to utilize.
You told me down in Missouri they had their deer are a lot thinner skinned than our northern deer, and they actually make veneer out of deer hides.
Yeah, so it's pretty, and that's where the fur industry or market has always fascinated me, because there's a lot of ins and outs that, you know, the average person has no clue about. But obviously, you know, there's the further north that we go in the North America, typically the bigger our animals get.
Mm-hmm.
Further south you go, they typically get smaller because of weather conditions, obviously. And so a deer that comes from, like, let's say southern Missouri, for instance, they don't have as thick of a hide. Of course, they're not as big of an animal as well. But when they send them to the tannery, they can usually only get a couple of layers that can be used for leather goods shaved out of that deer's hide.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you come up north to even portions of northern Missouri and Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, they can get, you know, 4 or 5, sometimes 6 layers of leather out of those hides. So, and you can tell that when you skin a deer here, it, just the weight of the hide itself, it's twice in comparison to what a smaller, you know, southern deer is. So it's pretty neat how those things are used, and, you know, just how you don't have to go very far geographically before Mother Nature equips animals to handle the cold winter conditions.
The only deer I got involved with helping skin with a guy that hadn't skinned one before either, and by the time we got done, that deer looked like we'd run over it with a double disc. It was pretty bad, but you can't imagine getting 4 or 5 layers of hide out of the hide.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, and just the layers of fat that our deer here in Iowa have, because, of course, they've got food. They don't have to go anywhere before they can get a mouthful of corn.
Sure.
But the fat that they put on in the wintertime, too, is really important to them, and it insulates them, and it helps get them through into the mm-hmm. spring months. So, yeah, Mother Nature's pretty inventive with some of her things that she equips animals with.
Okay. Very quickly, in just a few minutes, the trapping season will open. No big changes in the rules. And Iowa is number 5 in the number of fur bearer licenses.
Yeah, we are. Got a good tradition of trapping here. Raccoons, of course, have always been the bread and butter of Iowa. And hopefully we get a bunch of raccoon trappers this year, because we've got a gob of,
yes,
of
we do.
Raccoons this year.
Yes, but we do.
And we've talked in previous shows about how our bobcat quota for the southern portion of Iowa has increased to 3 now. So, mm-hmm. You know, most bobcat trappers or trappers know the procedure for getting an animal CITES tags. So, yep, we've got trapping season is underway now, and it'll run till the end of January for most critters. Beaver will go a little bit longer, of course, but yeah, hope to see a fair number of trappers out there this year.
Okay, a lot of good things going on in the great outdoors. Just get out and walk around in the cool weather. It's good for you.
That's right.
For the Family Vision Center in greater downtown Atlantic, this has been Bob Evensee along with Grant Jelly, the conservation officer for Castaneda County's On This Morning's Conservation Report.